him for twice his probable age, and from time to time was inclined to ramble in a seemingly senile and illogical manner, though these bouts were not as common as they used to be. Yet he was also capable of a tenacious and wiry strength, and possessed a razor-sharp mind that could cut through the stress and strain of his most unusual life. For a man whose first experience of the Deathlands had been near death under torture at the hands of Baron Jordan Teague and his psychopathic sect chief, Kort Strasser, in the Vale of Moxen, Doc was surprisingly able to hold his fragile sanity together.
I know. How much more of this can he take, right, lover?
Ryan turned back at the sound of Christy Roth's voice. The flame-haired woman was sitting with her knees drawn up to her chin, wrapped in the bearskin coat that hid the toned and shaped curves of her body. She flashed Ryan a smile that sparkled through her green eyes, yet she still showed signs of the strain caused by the jump. Ryan allowed himself a smile in return, and cursed as he felt the muscles of his face ache as they moved.
Yeah, you can always read my thoughts. It's true enough. Hurts bad for us, let alone what Doc's been through.
Ugh. Crazy old poodle outlive us all, you'll see.
Mildred tentatively raised herself onto one foot, remaining half-kneeling until she was sure of her balance. JB, still on his back, but now conscious, allowed himself merely a grunt of assent.
Okay, people, how are we doing?
It was a rhetorical question. They were doing well so far. By now, Ryan and Christy were on their feet, both massaging life back into their aching and dulled limbs. It was a luxury they knew they could allow themselves. JB was checking his blasters, which was no more than second nature to him. Mildred was checking Doc, pulling back his eyelid to see his rolling eyeball, as his muttering grew less incoherent.
My dear woman, I would appreciate a less heavy hand on my optic nerve.
Mildred gave an indulgent smile, breathing silent thanks that Doc had made it once more. There were still two members of the group who had failed to completely surface from the jump. Jack Lauren, the whip-thin and immensely strong albino, still lay on the floor of the chamber. His patched camo jacket, littered with the leaf-bladed throwing knives that were his specialty, seemed almost to smother him. As always seemed to happen during a jump, he had vomited. Wretched strings of bile dripped from his nose and mouth, forming small acrid puddles around his face. His breathing was regular and shallow, and he showed little sign of regaining consciousness. The boy beside him, however, was beginning to stir. The casual observer might at first think that it was Ryan Cotter who was prone on the chamber floor, then would notice that under the black mop of curly hair, the chiseled face was bereft of scarring and still held two eyes. The limbs were rangy, the musculature strong but still taking shape, but there was no mistaking that the boy was of Cotter blood. Dean Cotter, recently turned 12 years old, was his father in miniature, and for Ryan it was an uncanny experience to look on his son and see himself some 20-odd years previous. He even recognized the bridling brashness and overconfidence in his abilities that Ryan himself had been prone to at that age, except that Ryan had gone through this stage in the comparative safety and security of Front Royal, under the patronage of his father, the Vale's Baron. Dean had to go through this learning experience in an environment where one wrong move could mean instant death, or worse, a lingering, torturous death. So perhaps sometimes the older Carter was harsh in slapping down his son's brazen self-confidence, but only because he was aware of what was happening inside the boy, and felt an urgent need to quell the impetuousness that could be Dean's undoing. Even as this passed through the one-eyed warrior's mind, Dean groaned softly and raised his head slowly, opening his eyes and then raising himself in the same manner as his father. With Doc also now on his feet, Mildred devoted her medical attentions to taking care of Jack. The albino's tolerance to the bodily stresses of the jumps was lower than the others. Slowly, Jack came around, wiping the sticky mucus and bile from his face with his sleeve.
Okay to go?
Yeah. As ever be.
Let's do it.
The door to the chamber had unlocked automatically when the jump had been completed. It was a safety facet of the Matran system that the doors on both the sending and receiving chambers had to be shut before the transfer could take place, and that the comp systems would automatically lock and unlock the doors when the transfer got underway and ended. Or at least the aging and mostly uncared for tech had worked that way thus far. Any deviation was beyond their control, and so not really worth consideration or worry. They exited the chamber singly, checking the immediate area as they went, prepared to provide cover and defense for those who would follow. As always, Ryan took the lead, with JB at the rear. The anteroom and control room outside the Metrans unit were empty. The comp consoles winked and chattered softly in the semi-darkness, with much of the lighting having fallen prey to the passing years and lack of maintenance. The lack of dust was due to the anti-static air conditioner, which still worked. There were no signs of life. It took little time for them to ascertain that the redoubt was, on these lower levels at least, completely deserted. It was in a reasonable condition. There were signs of stress in some of the walls, suggesting that earth movements resulting from the tremors and quakes following Skydark had made some impact on the redoubt, but most of the lighting was still working, and there was some circulation of air through a purification plant. The air was clean but a little thin, suggesting that the plant was damaged.
Can't stay here too long. The air's fine now, but it won't last that way forever.
Why not? It's been okay up to now, right?
Think about it, my boy. The air is, shall we say, a little thin down here. Suggesting, I should imagine, some malfunction of the ancient technology keeping this place alive, albeit perhaps in a wheezing and somewhat dubious manner. A little like myself, in fact.
So?
So, it's thin and strained when the redoubt is empty. But now it has 7 people breathing in at a ridiculous rate. A rate made, with some irony, even faster by its very paucity.
Jack gave an amused look at the old man.
Big words for say we use faster than made.
Doc merely shrugged.
So how long you reckon we got?
Mildred shook her head, the ends of her plaits moving rhythmically, as though caught by a much-needed draft of air.
Couldn't say for sure, John. It's like being at a high altitude. I don't think we'd suffocate for a few days, but the more rarefied it gets, the more it might affect us. Hallucinations, maybe.
Great. Like Jolt, only not so good.
Think we can risk a night? I'd like us to get some rest before tackling whatever may be out there, or risk another jump.
I'd say we could do that.
Good. Now let's try and find the shower stalls, maybe some clean clothes. That'd make me feel better for a start.
Right. Phew! Stink like muty polecat in heat.
It didn't take long to find the shower stalls and washing facilities. Like most redoubts, this one was laid out to a specification that had been generally used. There had been exceptions, but for the most part it could be assumed that if a person had explored one redoubt, he or she had a fair chance of navigating every other one he or she came across. The showers were still working. As with several of the redoubts they had encountered so far, the lighting in this one was erratic, but the water was still on, and the heater still worked. The first streams of water were lukewarm, flecked with some decay and foreign matter from the pipes, but after a minute or so by Ryan's wristchron, the water was clear, flowing freely, and of an even temperature. They took turns to shower, keeping a guard at all times. It seemed that the redoubt was deserted apart from their presence, but they could never be too sure. The friends had been taken unawares on a previous occasion. It was a simple matter to find clean clothing. The storerooms for all redoubts were situated in the same place, and in this redoubt they were lucky enough to find underclothes and thermally insulated outerwear that had lain unused for over a century. They took the opportunity to change clothes and would later launder what they usually wore. One strange thing, though, the clothes weren't the usual regulation khaki and olive green, or white. Some of the clothes were in colors that seemed, under the dim lighting, to be black or a dark blue. Some of it, under the better lighting of the corridor, even revealed itself to be purple, a color rarely if ever seen in pre-dark set conditions. And the lighter colors were yellows and sky blues. It was a small but significant difference.
Well, it's different, but these colors are weird.
You're right. The armies from before Skydark would never have used this.
She held up a purple t-shirt that seemed in the light to have streaks of a faded pattern running across it.
This is no ordinary military redoubt.
Built on the same lines. Odd, though. Most of the non-military redoubts we've jumped to have been different. But this...
I know. It's uncanny and maybe just a bit creepy. It's a military base, but with so many non-military touches. If only it wasn't so damned dark. I'd swear that these rooms are just a bit smaller than the usual size. It's like someone got the military blueprints, but had to downscale just a bit. It just gives the place a screwy atmosphere, like looking into a distorting mirror.
Jack looked at her, puzzled.
Not feel danger here. Old sec weird. Seemed plenty weirder.
Doc, who had so far been silent, leaned thoughtfully on his sword stick, hands clasped over the silver lion's head.
I wonder.
Wonder what, Doc?
Ryan knew that when the old man was...